I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor and the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle. This is the 359th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. All sorts of stuff to get to this week. We'll talk markets, we'll talk volatility, we'll talk commodities, we'll talk about oil, we'll talk about policy, we'll talk about consequence, we'll talk about a whole heck of a lot of things. But before we get into all of that, sir, Mr. Nicolas Hodge, how goes you and your beautiful family, man?
Doing great, Gerardo. Getting ready for Easter, getting ready for spring break, going to Mexico, as you know, looking forward to it. How are you?
I am well. Our middle child, I call him our middle child because he'll always be our child, turns 23 sure. today, so celebrating his birthday. You know, another milestone moment. We've had a lot. The oldest got married a few weeks ago, and our middle one here turns 23 today. We will be in Portland here shortly to visit the art school that our youngest is getting into. And so got Easter this weekend. A lot to be thankful for. We're healthy. The world is crazy. It gets crazier by the hour, it seems like. But in the Del Real household, we are healthy. We are happy. We are well. We are united and making the best of our community here as the world seemingly falls into more and more chaos in true fourth turning fashion, right?
Oh, yeah. A long way to go in that turning as well. I see some people starting to get removed or leave from office. So expect a lot more of that over the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And then there'll be a first turning, which, of course, is a high, not to get too deep into the fourth turning stuff. But you can totally sense where we're at in terms of the desperation of the citizenry and how people are feeling and consumer sentiment and upward mobility and all that sort of stuff. I was actually talking with Chris Curl the other day. He was actually over my house, and then we were chatting, and I was telling him I was watching the Kings of Comedy. You remember the original Kings of Comedy from 1999, 2000?
Absolutely. Cedric, Bernie Mac, Chicago's own, baby.
I think we might have talked about that last week for 1 second. And I was saying that was like a whole different era. And it's true. That was the end of the century, 1999, 2000. And it's been a lot of headwinds in society and markets and politics ever since then. You had the dot-com crash. It took 10 or 13 years for the NASDAQ to recover. You had the housing crash. You had the utter disappointment of Obama after all the hope and inspiration he delivered in 2007 and 2008, just completely not following through on any of that in terms of holding banks and things accountable and continuing wars that were continued by Trump, that were continued by Biden, that are now being continued by Trump. And that was 25 years ago, that Kings of Comedy. And so a quarter century has passed, and I think it'll be another couple of years before we get all this truly behind us. But anyway, way off in the weeds there. I know we should talk about markets first.
No, let's talk about markets. Look, policy is consequential right now. And we saw that yesterday in President Trump's address, right? We went into that with the price of crude oil down below the $100 level. It had retraced to the 98 level. Gold was surging, looking like it was going to break that 4,800 level, which was impressive as all heck. Because if you recall the recent washout, it touched 4,100 briefly before what's been an impressive week, despite the $83 pullback today, still sitting at 4,675, flirting with that 4,700 level. Silver had pushed up above the 7,576 level before doing a U-turn after the, I guess I'll call it a speech. It sounded like, you know, a slurring and ramble about how we were going to send Iran, a country of 90 million people with a multi, you know, thousand year history. How were we going to send them back to the Stone Age? And that was followed up by our Secretary of War, Peter Hegseth, reinforcing that in all caps on X. And it's just, I'm looking at this going, none of this is funny. And it's affecting real human lives around the world. And look, let's keep it to markets. That conversation, that speech, whatever you want to call that thing, was incredibly consequential for the energy market, incredibly consequential for future inflation prints, consequential for what the Fed does. However we feel about the Fed, everybody knows how I feel about the Fed. But a lot of consequence as a result of that volatility, be it first and foremost there. I know you watch that like a hawk, not just overall market indice volatility, but I know you watch currency volatility, bond volatility, gold volatility. So I'll throw it back your way and say, what did you notice when you got back from, you know, having an evening out at sporting events with your family and spending some time and, you know, looking at your screen or looking at the ticker and looking at the volatility and looking at the rates and going, wait a minute, because you had to have noticed a sea change in direction, right?
Yeah. And I've been telling you that's sort of par for the course when volatility is escalated like it is. We were out at my oldest daughter had her last basketball game of the season, and then it's early t-ball practice for my son. And then I got back from that and I started reading what he was saying. I saw the Stone Age comments and I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, here we go. And sort of knew that it was set to go the other way, the markets I'm talking about, because we are still in that escalated regime of volatility, and it cuts both ways, which I feel like I've said 100 times now. I was writing earlier today, you probably felt pretty good about your portfolio on Tuesday and Wednesday. You probably closed the markets down yesterday saying, oh shit, we're back, baby. Like, it feels pretty good. And then you woke up this morning to what I wrote was a red sea of volatility. And that's true. The market was down significantly. Oil has spiked up. WTI, I'm talking about, not just Brent, over you know, $100 a barrel, and
it's 112 as we speak.
Yeah, you've got oil volatility still very escalated, up in the 90s, and that's on the same scale as the VIX. So, you know, just imagine the VIX up around 90. You've got gold volatility in the mid 30s, something like 37, 38. And then you've got the VIX itself at 24, which is not exorbitantly high, but is certainly above the 20. We'd like to see it where 20 and below is sort of smooth sailing. And again, you can get wide price swings when you have volatility up that high. So you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago that gold was just at 41, 4200 and then was pressing 4800. And I was having, I mean, at one point today, it was down more than $100. So yeah. Those moves are going to continue, and they're reflective of some of the banter you mentioned from the president and his cabinet, and some of the words that are coming out of his mouth. I mean, we're now over a month into this war that we won on the first weekend, and also we won in the first week, except it's week 5 or 6, and now we need hundreds of billions more dollars. We need a couple of more weeks. Last night, I didn't watch the speech, but I threw the transcript in ChatGPT. He's talking about, you know, 3 to 4 more weeks of bombs, the talking heads, and sending them back to the Stone Age. And so this back and forth of we won, it's over, total and utter victory, to, oh, it's going to be, you know, prolonged and protracted, and we need more boots on the ground, and we need more money, is volatility in and of itself. And that's being reflected in the markets. It's also having diminishing returns, right? Trump used to be able to move the markets. And I feel like he's been crying wolf enough that markets are starting to wise up. So, yeah, my portfolio was up significantly yesterday as well. But I knew as soon as I read those headlines when I got back from the practices, I was like, oh, shit, tomorrow's not going to be good. And then sure enough, it wasn't. So that's it on the volatility. I mean, until you get sort of a cooling off of the volatility, you're going to have these price swings both to the upside and to the downside. So, you know, continue to brace for that and continue to endure that. And then perhaps a bit more, I don't want to say important, but a bit more, well, yeah, important for the macro stuff is you do have a changing of some of the underlying drivers, major macro drivers in the market. So, you know, with oil where it is and with, you know, this whack-a-mole inflation that I've been talking about, you've had a softening of the hard stuff, the stuff that you drop on your foot. But go look at a chart of copper or corn or something like that, and you'll see that that's going to continue to hit the pocketbooks as people fill up their tanks to drive to the grocery store. And that's going to be reflected in the inflation prints that quickly get closer to 4% than 3%. And remember, we were just closer to 2% than 3%. So that's essentially, you know, close to a doubling of inflation inside of 2 months or a quarter. And that's going to come with slowing growth. We already saw a slowdown in recent quarters before We even had this war, and with oil doing what it's doing, that's going to cause a further slowdown in the economy. I'm not ready to start throwing around the recession word yet, but those inputs, which the algorithms read and that markets trade on, don't like it when the inflation is rising much faster than the growth. And in this case, the growth isn't rising, it's contracting. And that's why you have an S&P that's still down some 4.5% for the year. And it's why you're having a rollover of some of the previous high-flying sectors like tech and things like that, that had significantly high, you know, priced equity valuations. And so whether or not this war ends in the next 4 to 6 weeks, you know, people are pointing to the meeting with Xi Jinping in the middle of May as a natural sort of, you know, end date, because Trump would want to wrap this up to go over there to negotiate or have meetings from a position of strength, not have this ongoing war. Either way, now the cat's out of the bag, right? I mean, now the inflation is going up and the growth is slowing down, and the market's going to have to digest that. So we could have sideways markets and increased volatility in precious metals and commodities for the next, you know, 3, 6, 9 months.
Yeah. And look, I think there's a part of our country that really underestimates Iran's ability to fight on the ground. And we touched on it last week, right? But today we bombed some civilian infrastructure, a bridge that's, you know, very, very critical for civilian travel to and from large parts of the country. And when you start doing that, when you start making the enemy, if we want to call Iran that, they wrote the American people a letter saying, we are not your enemy. It's your government that keeps doing A, B, C, and D, and we're going to continue to defend ourselves. But when you start putting a country or a government or a regime, whatever you want to call Iran, in a position where they're starting to have less and less to lose every day, and they're able to diversify the oil proceeds to other countries and fetch these high prices, I don't know that we get to dictate when this ends. And Israel sure in the hell is not doing us any favors. They just went ahead and murdered the wife, killed the wife, bombed the wife of the lead mediator that was giving messages back and forth between Pakistan and the U.S. They bombed his residence, killed the guy's wife, and injured him severely. So that happened today. I don't believe that we are sending 50,000 troops as a peacekeeping mission to make sure that this is wound down in 4 weeks. The dollar index, the price of oil, they continue to talk to me and they continue to tell me that this isn't over in 3 to 4 weeks, no matter what Trump and his squad says. And so, you know, we're going to have to see. Israel was very vocal this past week that any boots on the ground wouldn't be theirs.
Well, right. We'll fight their wars for them, right?
And then Mr. Trump comes out and says, can't afford daycare and Medicare and Medicaid. Like, that's the stuff we're cutting to be able to fund this war so we can have this defense buildup. So, again, the military-industrial complex that Mills and Eisenhower and Kennedy warned about, you know, over 50, 60 years ago is in full effect. And look, I am all for our brave military men and women. I am all for America first. I am a proud American. But this ain't it, folks. This ain't it. And I think, you know, the mid to long term consequence of everything that the self-inflicted conflict war that we're engaged in, I look at it and I take a deep breath and I get exhausted, Nick, because so much of it seems unnecessary unless people at the highest level, and we'll talk about this later a bit, are compromised in a very serious way. And every week, with every decision that I see, it becomes clearer and clearer to me that that has to be it, right?
I mean, we've talked about the Epstein stuff ad nauseum, and we won't let that go away. We'll continue to bring it up. But not only did this serve as a huge distraction from progress that was being made, at least in the zeitgeist, being conscious or cognizant of what was going on in you know, our leaders' back rooms and bedrooms. And maybe we'll talk more about that in a little bit with some cross-dressing husbands of cabinet members and things like that. But yeah, no, it's not good for the American people. And of course, as a libertarian and a mostly anti-interventionist, you don't want to see these wars of choice that drain our treasure and our people and our confidence in our leaders. And that's just going to continue to erode. You mentioned the dollar, and you mentioned yield. So let's touch on those for a second. The dollar is as strong as it's been in nearly a year since like May or June of
Correct.
Last year. It touched something like 100.6 on the DXY, the bond yields on both the 10-year and particularly the 2-year, the shorter term yields, which are reflective or indicative of what the Fed is doing, or in this case should be doing, has risen more precipitously. So you've got a 10-year at 4.3%. You've got a 2-year that bounced just right off 4%. I mean, it touched the 4% mark. It cooled off a little bit to 3.8%. But that's the other thing that's given pause to the hard asset rally and the hard commodity rally. I mean, tough for those things to continue to go up when they have historic inverse correlations to yields and the dollar. And those things, again, aren't going to change course until we get a changing of course in the war. And then later this year, in fact, next month is Mr. Powell's last month there, I believe in May. So we'll get a new Fed chair and we'll see what he's talking about. But until we get a cooling off of the dollar and bond yields, I think you could have a sideways market in these precious metals and commodities. And again, it might sound like a hedge, but that's not to say we're not in a long-term bull market. It's not to say the demand is being eroded from
Not
the
at all.
electrification of everything and the energy transition and all of that. It's just that when you get a black swan, when you get markets that you have to deal with, this is what happens in the intermediate term, and certainly what we're seeing now.
Important point that you made there, that we could get sideways movement in the metal space. And look, if sideways movement in the metal space means $4,500 to $4,800 gold, I'll take it. If that means $69 to $74, $75 silver, I'll take it. We would have been thrilled with these numbers last
Sure.
year had anybody offered them up. I think, those, especially people like I that just dabble in the resource space, I think a lot of us were spoiled by the equity appreciation as those commodity prices surged higher, right? And I think last week was a stabilizing of a lot of the junior space, especially for the most part. And this week, actually, despite the volatility, I look at 1 week charts of some of my biggest holdings, largest holdings that were clipped by 50% over the past month, and they bounced back, some 20% from the recent lows. Several names are up 15, 20, 25% from recent lows. So it doesn't take much in the way of adding value. And again, I'm preaching to companies that have news. Get your news out if it's accretive and it adds value. The market will eventually reward it and recognize it. But you have to continue to be busy and ignore the short-term noise. And there's going to be a lot of short-term noise. That doesn't mean that equities can't put up a 30% day or a 40 or 50% day on good news, but you got to deliver the news. Look, let's be frank, Nick. You and I talk to a lot of CEOs on a daily basis, and a lot we've been hearing from several lately. Oh, I'm waiting on better markets to do marketing or to do news, or to put news out, or I'm not rushing news right now because of the markets. And at some point, you just got to say, your job is to create value for shareholders. The markets are going to do what the markets are going to do. You should be thankful for $4,670 gold. You should be thankful for $74 silver, $550 copper, $84 uranium. If that's your baseline right now, go get busy and go make some things happen. And there's a lot of companies that are doing that right now. It's good to see some of those bouncing back. And it was really good to see a lot of news come out this week. As we get ready for Easter, a lot of companies rush to get some news out there to let the markets know, hey, we know it's volatile out there, but we're working, we're cashed up, we got good projects, we got good people, and we're going to keep doing that despite the noise. So, yes, to summarize, I absolutely agree with you. I expect, some sideways action in the gold and the silver and the copper space. I expect volatility in the energy markets, in the oil markets, in the VIX. Uranium will continue to be boring. A boring uranium price is a good uranium price right now, especially in these markets, right? Where you see, as you mentioned, a Red Sea of volatility in your underground alpha issue. That was well written, by the way, as always. So, look, different markets are going to react differently. overall, I think in the junior space, we've really seen a stabilizing and some price discovery there, with a lot of companies getting absolutely taken to the woodshed. Good to see some of those recover this week. Hopefully they can build on that momentum.
I was going to share my screen, but I got a new computer because I broke my screen last week, and it will make me restart everything if I want to allow permission to this app we're using to access my screen. So instead of a picture, you're going to get 1,000 words. So the GDXJ is the chart I'm looking at. That's the junior gold mining equity ETF. And you'll recall that, I know you'll recall because we were in New Orleans together, it had just made new highs in New Orleans. This is back in, you know, late October, early November. And people were, I won't say euphoric, but we were feeling pretty good. The GDXJ had gone from, at the beginning of 2025, it was $42. And then by the time we went to New Orleans, it was $110. Mm-hmm. So more than doubling, on the verge of tripling. And then we had the government shut down, and it sold down to some 80 some dollars. And then what happened throughout the course of November, December, and January is we had that very strong run up in gold prices.
Yep.
And silver prices that took, you know, took out $5,000 gold, took out nearly $120 silver, something like that. And the GDXJ went all the way to 156.
Yep.
So started 2025 at 42. Just a couple of weeks ago, at the beginning of March, it was 156. And what it's done now is it's sold off. As of a couple of weeks ago, March 23rd, it was, call it 100. It was 102. And now it's oscillating around there. But what I'm getting at here is you're consolidating to the point where it was last October, when the volatility started for the government shutdown. And if, like you say, if all we get is a consolidation of the junior mining complex at, call it 110, 115 on the GDXJ, that's still nearly a tripling from where it started in 2025. And so, yeah, we were obviously loving the condition of our portfolios, and they're still obviously significantly higher than they were a year ago, although lower than they were a couple of weeks ago. But to your point about the CEOs, they should be giddy about the commodity price backdrop that they have right now. Hardly whatever it is, copper, like you said, silver, or gold at 4,400, whatever it ends up settling at, right? So I agree with you. Go out there, and we're involved in companies that are, don't get it twisted.
Absolutely.
We've got some companies that are in the middle of some great exploration and drill campaigns that I'm very much looking forward to seeing the results for in the coming 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. But yeah, you can't control the market, and you can't time the market from what I've seen in my 20 years. And you certainly can't just sit on your hands when you've got a commodity price backdrop like this. So yeah, I'm with you. Get out there and get going. And I'm taking my own advice. Like I wrote two checks today. I was filling out subscription documents for deals. Right. So I don't think this long-term commodity bull market is over. And I think there's a lot of exciting times ahead.
Yeah, I think we're baseball parlance. Everyone knows I'm a huge Cubs fan. It's the bottom of the third inning in a 9-inning bull market, folks, for the precious metals, and copper, frankly, might be in the second inning. Nowhere near the point where we're seeing tops, nowhere near where retail has come in and rushed into the gold space. That hasn't happened in the West. It's happened in the East. It's happened in China. It's happened. And there's a reason why silver and gold premiums in China, the physical metal, silver is like a $15 premium to the current spot price. Gold is like a $200-$300 premium to the current spot price. So yes, those are cultures that are accustomed to the wealth preservation that gold offers through thousands of years of seeing their wealth preserved. The West, retail participation, household ownership, the major indices versus gold ownership, all of those are near all-time lows. Tons of leg room in the precious metals space. So kudos to those companies that are exploring, that are out there allocating capital wisely, using the drill bit to make a discovery, making accretive deals, looking at M&A that makes sense in this environment. It's a great environment to add value, folks. So we'll touch on some of the companies that are doing some of those things here in the premium portion of the podcast. But look, I am known to dislike both sides of the aisle, right? And so let me start by giving it to the folks on the left real quick. And I'm talking the politicians, not the people. People typically aren't the problem. It's the politicians for the most part. The politicians on the left have been handed, if I was a strategist, right? And I had the headlines that I had to come out of the Republican side this week, and I'll go through them in a second. If I had those headlines this week, I couldn't lose a campaign. My candidate wouldn't be able to lose a primary or a governor's seat or any kind of anything. Because the people on the right, the politicians on the right, are giving me all the ammunition, and they're giving me the pistol to go, and they're giving me extra clips. They're giving me the site. They're giving me all the things, right? And instead of using that to go and do what I'm supposed to do with that when I have it, the left is tone deaf, can't message, and deserves a lot of the blame for what enabled the mess that we're in right now. The mess that we're in right now, folks, these are headlines from this week. Mind you, it's not Sunday yet. We still got all of Thursday, all of Friday, all of Saturday, and all of Sunday. We got most of the week left. This is up until today. This is what we got. Bondi, AG Pam Bondi is gone. Do you think it's a coincidence she was due to testify about the Epstein files and the victims in a couple of weeks? No, I don't think it's a coincidence. Do I think there were other factors? Probably. At the end, it doesn't matter. She's out of here, right? By the way, they're still going to want to go ahead and have her testify is what the Dems are saying. Ro Khanna is the one that is actually doing something with all this stuff effectively. Everybody else is just kind of, I don't know where they're at. Kristi Noem's husband has big tits. And
Huge.
The biggest. And look, I don't care if you cross-dress. I don't care if Kristi has an open marriage. I do care if she was using taxpayer money for $200 million commercials where she's on a horse on the mountains and also using my taxpayer dollars to bang her side piece on a plane outfitted like a hotel room. That part I care about. Her open marriage, I could care two whatever's about. I have no issues with that. I have no issue with Kristi Noem's husband dressing up in drag or pretending to be a baddie or doing whatever he does. I do care that our FBI and the people that do the background checks for these people weren't able to find this or identify this as a potential pressure point for blackmail, because that is absolutely a potential pressure point for blackmail. And again, I think it speaks to the diligence or the lack thereof of this administration and how they're going ahead and putting people in the positions that they're putting people into. I think, look, I'll keep going for this week. Peter Hegseth, weeks before the decision was made to bomb Iran, called his broker and said, I want to buy millions of dollars in defense stocks. Can you make that happen? And the broker had to call him back and say, are you fucking crazy? You are the Secretary of War. You are actually in the room making the decision, supposedly on behalf of the American people's best interest. You want to buy millions of dollars of defense stocks that are going to benefit from this? Who do you think you are? One of the Trump kids? No, you can't do it. You leave that to the Trump kids. They can do it, but you can't do it. You can't be like the Trump kids. It continues. Trump pardoned a guy. Trump pardoned a guy, right? This is the guy that, you know, we got to go get the little lady with the Liz that's been here, you know, illegally for 30 years, but hasn't committed a crime other than being here illegally. We got to go get her. She's a threat. Joseph Schwartz was convicted of a $39 million healthcare fraud and sentenced to 36 months in prison. Which, by the way, $39 million for 36 months. I might take you up on that deal, right? But that's another.
Not even a month, a million.
Yeah, come on. Easy work. Every month, I'm like, another million, baby, another million. His nursing home empire, it was a fraud, so it collapsed. And he didn't pay over 15,000 employees, folks. These are real people with real lives, with real families that had real bills and real homes. After serving 3 months, he was pardoned by President Trump. Not only was he pardoned, his obligation to pay $5 million in restitution was also erased. Now, guess what did happen prior to that pardon? He paid what? He had $1 million to lobby the White House to influence the decision. We are seeing corruption, and look, both sides do it. But the people on the right now are running the ship. It's not the midterms yet. They still have the House. They still have the Senate. They still have the presidency. So they got to take the cake on who's making the decision to be accountable. And the headlines that came out, oh, by the way, Lindsey Graham's at Disney World with a kid's toy walking around aimlessly. Lindsey Graham is, and I don't care if he's gay, but I know he's single, at least openly single, not married, without any kids. What he's doing at Disney World with the kid's toy is bizarre to me. Bayer got immunity, I forgot to mention this a week and a half or two ago, from a chemical that's been known to cause cancer. They got immunity from the government. A.G. Bondi, who's now out, was the person that petitioned and approved this so that Bayer could never be sued if their cancer-causing chemical caused you, the American farmer, cancer. You could never go to court and say you knew about this. They had already paid out settlement funds. They did admit guilt, but by way of the fact that they were making settlements, they were admitting the fact that they knew this stuff was cancerous. They now have immunity. Even Robert Kennedy Jr. was like, this isn't making America healthy again, Don. I don't know what you're doing. What he's doing is clear. So it does warm my heart just a bit that TMZ, which I think is its own little cancer on society, right? With its paid informants at every hotel and police department and airport and everything else, right? The one thing they do well is they break news, and they're really good about following people around and getting the beat on people because of the paid, you know, network of people that they have around the world. They do that really brilliantly. They typically reserve that for celebrity scandals and things of that nature. They have now set their sights on Congress because Congress is on vacation. Among the people on vacation are 30 people from both sides in Scotland because none of them care about us, guys. They're in Scotland visiting castles on taxpayer money. This is not on their own dime. Forget the fact that they're on vacation. They're out on vacation on our money visiting fucking castles while the president is talking about cutting Medicaid and Medicare and I saw a veterans housing program that was just cut today. Nobody told the veterans about it. So that we can go bomb Iran, a nation that has made it implicitly clear it doesn't have a nuclear weapon. You can stop us from getting a nuclear weapon. We have no intention on targeting your people unless you continue to do what you're doing. We reserve the right to respond to military aggression. That's a whole different thing. And then on that front, we can't even get an accurate count as to how many of our men and women on our side have died or have been injured, because that's a no-no now too. So that's the rant, folks. These are the elected people that are in office right now on both sides that are meant to represent us and are supposed to be looking out for our best interest. They're pardoning fraud. They're front-running markets. They're doing insider trading. They're cross-dressing, which I don't care about. They have open marriages, which I don't care about. Just don't be the party of hypocrisy. Don't come over here and tell me how everybody, you know, is this, this, and that, and all of a sudden you have skeletons in your closet like everybody does. It's just a sad state of affairs. And unfortunately, I think we have a couple of several years of this. My hope, me being the optimist, right? My hope is that it's getting so bad that people on both sides of the aisle are going to come together and say, yes, we're different on this and we're different on this, but on these things we can agree on. We want upward mobility. We want transparency. We want honest, accountable government. And this ain't it, no matter which side you're on. Because folks, this ain't it.
No, it ain't it. So that was, you know, that was a pretty damn good rant. I'll just have some levity. I'm looking at pictures of Mrs. Doubtfire with her fat suit on, and I can only imagine that's what Kristi Noem's husband looked like. So
Mrs. Doubtfire had nothing on Kristi Noem's husband. I mean, I got to say that.
I don't know where to take it from there. Neither side has cared about you for a long, long time. Lots of skeletons in all their closets. Clearly, some of them are compromised and aren't working for you either because of that, because they're compromised or because they're incentivized to do otherwise from their handlers and those that fund their campaigns. And so it's the reason you and I stay in the middle and try to tell other people to be in the middle as well and not get caught up in the partisanship. And think any politician is their friend. I could rant about the left a little bit and then here in Washington, but I won't go too far. I mean, yeah, they could be seizing everything that you just said to dominate these midterms. And yet I don't see any clear vision. And I don't see any real leadership in the Democratic Party either. So it's tough to see sort of where we go from here and what the next round of leadership is going to be like. They seem content to continue on with, they've lightened up on the wokeness a little bit, but they're still attacking the rich and the producers. And yeah, I said earlier, I had, you know, Chris Curl was over the house the other day and he's like, man, this governor is just taking away any incentive you'd want to have to live in the state of Washington if you're a producer or a business owner, because he made a joke. He said, people certainly aren't here for the weather. And it's like, yeah, I don't know why you would want to treat the business class, the investor class, the producer class like that, who you would want on your side to back you both monetarily and socially in this next round of elections. And it makes me, it just turns me off more from both sides, given what's going on of late. So yeah, tough times out there and par for the course, unfortunately. So that's why we're here preaching what we preach every week and doing what we've done for the past, gosh, going on 15 years or something like that now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I forgot to add in those headlines because it's been a week that Trump's spiritual advisor that admitted to raping a 10-year-old girl in the 80s was just let out after serving 6 months of a 10-year suspended sentence. Hey, justice for all. Yeah. Justice for all.
Yeah. Oh, the other thing I was going to say is the people that do make sense get attacked, right? Like I saw Dan Bongino was attacking Massey this week, right? Calling him a fraud and a shyster. And it's like, man, from where I sit, this is like the guy who's making the most sense on a lot of issues.
Absolutely.
Right?
So absolutely. It has consistently.
It's clear that they don't want the truth out there. It's clear that they'll attack people who want to get at the truth and are voracious about doing so. And as you alluded to earlier, they're content to get rid of people who are not even wanting to get the truth out, but are in a position to be under oath or testify or otherwise have an obligation to do so because of their role in the government. And that turnover just feeds into the volatility, and it shows how erratic this administration truly is, and markets don't like that either.
No, not at all. Not at all. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast, unless you have anything else to get off your chest, Mr. Hodge.
Well, I did want to talk about the AI and then the robot vacuum.
We got to talk about that. Take your time. You wrote a brilliant article. How could I forget that? This week that had me in stitches. I mean, I was literally at home just laughing my ass off. So please take the podium.
So this is a setup for a publication we have called Digital Dispatch that is, you know, a sector I don't really dabble in all that much, but we have Chris Curl and he's out with a new report about something called NVIDIA's Atlas project. And the way I framed it up is this: it's about making these devices that we have and these robots that are coming and the AI that we have smarter and more able to act in the physical world in real time. So my example was a robot vacuum, which I was loath to get for years because I knew the security vulnerabilities, right? I had seen years ago the fact that they were mapping your home and that could be uploaded and not just put in the hands of the robot vacuum companies, but obviously could then be accessed by anyone who is able to gain access to it, who would then have the floor plan of your home. And so and we've seen that actually in the past couple of weeks. I don't know if you saw, but there was a gentleman, I think he might have been in Spain, who was trying to program his robot vacuum so he could control it with a game, like a game controller, like I would say Sega, but that would date me, like a PlayStation controller.
Yeah.
amid doing that, he was able to gain access to the feeds of 7,000 robot vacuums that had floor plans, that had pictures from their sensors, videos, you know, people, I don't want to say naked, but, you know, vulnerable pictures of people that the robots had taken. And so there very much is still a limitation on this technology, and that vulnerability is only the half of it. So We get this robot vacuum a couple of months ago, and we turn it loose on our house, and we think it's going to be at least, we know it's not going to clean everything. We still have a cleaning lady that comes every other week, but we have a couple of dogs, and we think, oh, at least take care of some of the dog hair from week to week, right? No, this thing is a fucking piece of shit, Gerardo.
A horny piece of shit, apparently.
I'm going to get to that in a second. So it obviously links to the Wi-Fi in the house, and it goes around and it learns things, and you can give it no-go zones. So we have this area rug in the living room that's got like high pile. It's like a thick carpet, and we know it's not going to do well on there. So my wife like draws a square around it on the map and tells it like that's a no-go zone. This thing doesn't give a fuck. It goes in the no-go zone no matter what. It's like on the carpet, like struggling in the pile, right? And then it starts like coughing up hairballs, making the shit, I'm sorry, I'm cussing a lot now, more dirty than it was before the vacuum even went over it. Like literally like hairballs like a cat would cough up, just like lint balls all over the carpet. So that doesn't work. And then whenever the Wi-Fi goes out, if the router gets unplugged or we lose power, which we've done in a couple of times in the past couple of weeks because we've had some windstorms, it forgets everything anyway. It's got to like relearn everything, reattach to the Wi-Fi, just in utter disgrace. And then to the horny part, it's just bumping into stuff, right? Like in a very thrusty fashion. Like it was trying to get into like bumping up against the end tables, and like they have a flat base, and it was like ramping itself up on them, right? Like just continually doing it. And the other day I was in the bedroom and I heard like a commotion in my wife and I's master bath, and I go in there and this thing is like mounting our scale and like relentlessly, like not giving up, just like getting up on it like a horse is like mating or something, right? And I'm like, this is too much for me, man. So anyway, I know that's kind of funny, right? Which is why I wrote about it.
Absolutely hilarious.
We're done with this thing. It's only been 2 or 3 months, and I think it's going in the e-waste dustbin. And that's precisely the point. So with this NVIDIA Atlas initiative, they're using their chips and their technology to make these devices smarter in the physical world and in real time. So, and they don't have to learn repeatedly. The way I put it in the article was, right now that robot, it learns the same way a goldfish learns after it bumps into the glass 50 times, right? But with these new chips and with what NVIDIA is doing, these devices are going to be able to literally see and not have to learn, right? And that's really the game changer in the technology space, specifically as it relates to robots. And, you know, there's, I don't know if you saw the video a couple of weeks ago of the Chinese robots that were doing kung fu. That's what I'm talking about here, right? Like, they're able to have balance and dexterity and see in real time. And by the way, I Googled those robots. I forget the name of them, but I looked it up and I Googled it. And you can buy one now for like 50 or 60 grand. So maybe you'll be in the market. And what Chris was saying to me the other day while he was here is, look, in a couple of years, even the Tesla, what's that called? Like Optimus or something like that. They got a robot. He's like, look, these things are going to be $20,000 or $25,000 in a couple of years. And there's no reason that you're not going to have one standing here in your kitchen chopping up your charcuterie and sauteing your vegetables, right? And he's like, we're on the precipice and not a lot of people can see it. I know there's some technologists and people who talk about the singularity and things like that, but I think we're very, very close to exactly what I just said. Like people having full-blown autonomous smart robots in their house, the way we've been trying to do these robot vacuums for the past 10 or 15 years. And again, I think we're very close to that. So that I just wanted to let people know about this report that he's got out there. I'm sure if you're on our email list, you've seen the video or just Google NVIDIA's Atlas initiative. And he's got new reports up about companies that are leveraging this technology to do all sorts of stuff, robot automation, factory automation, and things like that. Because before, you could have a robot arm, let's say, for an example, in like an automotive production line. And yes, it's a robot, and yes, it's quasi-smart, but it's only good at its one job, right? Like it's good at picking up the bolt, taking it over here, and putting it in the hole. It's not good at, stopping that job, going on to another task, coming back to that job, and stuff like that. And that's where we're getting really close to. So I think that's pretty exciting, even though I'm not, a huge tech guy. But I also am excited about it because I think it's going to be profitable for those people who invest in the adjacent technologies.
Yeah, no, the world is most definitely changing. And, you know, for all my cynicism about government, which I think eventually will lead to a positive change, question is when, right? There's still a lot of innovation. We have people going to the moon right now. And, you know, there's still a lot of ingenuity. There's still a lot of human compassion out there that I think wants a different world. And so important to keep that in mind when we go through the headlines and, you know, see some of the madness and bizarro-ness that is around us every day, right?
That's it.
And you know, AI plays a large part of that. I don't think AI is all gloom and doom. I think there's a lot of potential there to really harness a lot of really, really consequential outcomes. So matter of will, and let's hope, you know, the right people are at the helm for at least one part of it, right?
Yeah, maybe in a couple of weeks we'll talk about how I'm using AI, and I'm actually interested to see if you're using it all, because I know we all have accounts to ChatGPT, but Chris was saying he uses Claude and a couple of other ones, and I think it would just be a good discussion, because I think people are interested in that. I was talking to a couple of dads at baseball practice the other day, and they were asking, you know, how we use AI in our business. And, you know, I obviously told them, but there's a couple of things I'd like to talk about, including a company that's been popping up in press releases here recently as it relates to AI in the resource space. So, but in 2 weeks, because I won't be here next week. So buena suerte next week without me.
There you go. There you go. All right, folks, let's get to the premium portion of the podcast. That was a good therapy session, by the way. Definitely needed it. I am head out of the Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 359th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. I haven't checked the news for an hour. I'm almost scared to go look, but let me go peek and see what's going on and get ready for the next thing on the calendar. Y'all have a great, great Easter weekend. Take care of each other out there, folks.
See ya.